Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we're going to dot some I's and cross some T's when it comes to the spring portal and transfer portal news, but then Chris K and I are going to discuss some CFF best ball strategy, specifically with regards to how we start our drafts, as well as what we look for later on in drafts and wherever else that'll take us. We've got all that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the fabulous work we are doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there to any of our illustrious tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's college fantasy, Devy, Campus of Canton leagues, college IDP, college DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed in those games. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And the handsome fellow once again joining me here today is Mr. Chris K at Realist Chris K on Twitter. Chris, welcome back, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm facing challenges. You know, the people are talking. I'm like a regular at this point, Jared. I mean, you pretty much can just put my photo on the header of this thing at this point. But yeah, I will say you're making this a little bit more difficult these days. Specifically, the show sheet was delayed a lot. You know, you're trying to make it where I'm not being, you know, as prepared, because I come to all podcasts super prepared. So, but I'm fighting the good fight. I go back to work this week, and what better way to start the week off with Chasing the Natty?
Well, first of all, congratulations on going back to work this week. That'll be fun for you.
There's nothing to congrats me about that, but I do appreciate you.
But again, it's funny you mentioned that about the show sheet, Kay, because I almost didn't send you one for this show, outside of the fact that, again, we're going to cover some spring portal news and one spring game here. And so I wanted to have some notes for that. But we are discussing some CFF best ball. So that's just kind of regular draft strategy here, kind of talking about where we're at this point in the season, like how things are different this year. And I really wanted it to be kind of more of a free flow conversation. I have some things kind of written down. Like, I know for a fact I want to talk about kind of best ways to start, not less because like I'm super interested in that, but also like I've gotten like maybe five or six different people who have DM'd me about that the last couple of weeks, and I haven't really had a great answer to it. So I think this will be kind of the perfect opportunity to really go a little bit in depth on that. And then two, okay, you just put out your article on campusofcanton.com regarding the kind of late round QB strategy, and you go beyond just which quarterbacks should you target, like what type of quarterbacks to go, but you also talk about like how do you adjust other positions, like just because you're out of quarterbacks, what kind of wide receivers should you be hitting? Should you be hitting them early? Should you be hitting high upside guys? Where do you get your tight ends? A really good point you brought up in there was talking about, like, you know, positional flexibility with certain guys and everything like that. So one, if you have not checked out that article already, go check it out on campusofcanton.com. But I think that makes a perfect opportunity for us to really kind of dive into some strategies regarding, like, what do you do when you punt certain positions? Like, you focus on quarterbacks, but I think we could touch on the other positions here today as well. And so, yeah, but again, that's almost why I didn't send you a sheet, because I really do want it to be very free flow. I'm going to, like, what I'm going to do when we get to that point in the show, I'm going to throw up our ADP sheets. That is like where we calculate all the ADP and everything like that. And we're just kind of have that up on the screen, and we'll just kind of go from there for the most part. So it should be a fun one. Again, we'll cross some I's, dot some T's when it comes to this, the portal and everything like that. But other than that, it's gonna be a fun one here today, Kay. I can't wait to see where it takes us.
Yeah, I think we're gonna fight the good fight today and trek through it. You just said, by the way, dotting T's and crossing I's.
Did I mean, really? So
you did.
No
but
way.
I didn't want you to freak out about it. So I waited a little bit. But yeah, this will be great. Sometimes the best conversations are ones that are lightly structured. And this is the topic of all topics that is like, there's no wrong answer. And
agreed.
Kind of a free flowing conversation will be good here. But yeah, this will be a good one.
All righty. I say we go ahead and get started over. And get through the spring portal news and the last spring game here, so we'll get right to that. But first, you guys know me, got to give you a couple of quick announcements. Check out the latest episode of Defending the Natty with myself and Nate Marquise. We talked freshmen, instant impact, sashes, fades. Great conversation, 36 different players we talked about in there. Great stuff there. And the next month, we will be hitting on the supplemental players. So a lot of guys that have already been in your leagues for a while that are pretty widely available. We'll talk about some instant impact guys, some guys that are going high in CFF drafts right now that are pretty available for the most part, but also some kind of older stashes that maybe you're willing to hold on to another year. We'll definitely touch on a couple of those when we get to quarterbacks here in a second for the spring portal. And then the other two kind of main announcements that are more just general campuscanton.com wide announcements. One, the Devi Guide, the 2024 Devi Guide comes out Monday the 6th. So if you're interested whatsoever in how guys translate to the NFL from college, it is a excellent, excellent piece of writing. Really a one-of-a-kind unique guide that can really break down how guys are going to translate to the NFL. So if you're interested in that, go check that out. And then the other part is that we are teaming up, of course, once again, with CFB Winning Edge and preparing his team profiles this upcoming year, which include analysis on, you know, defenses, offenses, depth charts, pretty much everything you need to know to really kind of start gauging how these teams will match up against each other, which will be a huge help when it comes to schedule analysis. So I am very much, very much looking forward to that. So that being said, I say, okay, we go ahead and get on into these, finish off some of these spring portal news players here. And we'll start with the quarterbacks here. I got five guys up on the screen. Only one of them, really, I would say, is a guy that we are anticipating to potentially be an impact for this year. Two of the guys underneath him in Ja'Cory Brown and CJ Tiller, those are probably more future plays. Some guys I think are worth mentioning. Really, again, those stashes I was talking about a second ago. And then two more guys at the bottom there that I don't anticipate them being values this year or maybe ever again. But it is, I think, important to note that where they're headed. So we'll start with the top guy here, Timmy McClain. Former quarterback out of UCF, former quarterback out of South Florida. He has been a journeyman and a backup for years now. And when he entered the portal, he was pretty clear on the fact that he was looking for a place where he could start. And given some of the schools that he was looking at, he was looking at Georgia State, looking at Toledo. He was looking at some schools where he would, you know, I would say had a very good shot to start if he did go there, even though he's coming in after the spring and would only have the summer and fall to really kind of get up to speed. So of course, he goes to a place that is going to potentially mess up one of our favorite players for CFF purposes, and that is Arkansas State. Jalen Raynor, a guy that has been going QB20 in drafts, very high upside. Nate Marquise has called him the G5 Kyler Murray, which I totally understand where he's kind of coming from with that, given Raynor's athleticism. It's great. But again, you go back to the part about the fact that McClain was pretty clear. He's going to a place where he thinks he can start. He ends up at Arkansas State. That tells me McClain thinks he's going to start here. It's okay. How do you feel about this? How do you feel? Do you think that this impacts Raynor? Do you think that we should be potentially scared that we're drafting a guy in the top 20 QBs that may not even start this year?
Yeah, you know, I don't love it from Raynor's perspective. Someone that's drafted him a few times. If you have drafted him, I'd probably pump the brakes a little bit. I think ultimately he wins the job, and it's McClain's more of a depth piece. And I think kind of like there's maybe some similarities with like the Colin Schley move where The offenses or the coaches of those two teams, Arkansas State and Virginia Tech, they wanted a depth piece, a guy that could compete in a sense, more McLean versus Raynard than Schley versus Jones, but then allow for them to really push those guys to the max in terms of their rushing ability. Both of them, Jones and Raynard, are great runners. So like being able to have a backup that could allow for you to kind of push the envelope here on like their rushing usage is nice. I think, McLean could theoretically beat out Raynor. Raynor had a great freshman year, had flashes, more flashes than not of productivity and quality quarterback play. But I think the concern would be, Butch Jones is just kind of a wild card here. So ultimately, I think, McLean is still undraftable. Raynor is definitely draftable, but you'd have to slot him down in your rankings or where you would take him typically. But I don't love it, but I think it'll be fine. If Raynor can't beat out McLean, then we probably weren't going to get a great season out of him anyways. I don't think McLean is that special to think that a guy like Raynor can't beat him out.
I think that if you're somebody who is pretty high on Raynor and you still think that he is going to be the guy that'll be the starting quarterback for Arkansas State, I don't see, even with this transfer, how you can justify drafting him in the top 20 QBs, given the fact that, again, this is a McLean is a guy that has been very, very clear on the fact that he is someone that is planning on going somewhere he can start. Again, Toledo and Georgia State were two of his other options, and in my opinion, those were clearer paths to start than Arkansas State here. So clearly, again, he thinks he has a really good shot. I would say if you're drafting Raynor, probably wait a little bit longer. Make sure he's like your QB3. Get a high upside QB3 out of him if you really think he'll start. Or if you don't think he'll start and you think he'll start by like game three or four because Butch Jones thinks he's made a mistake, that's kind of the direction I might go with it as well. I haven't gotten a ton of Raynor already this year because, again, he kind of goes in a range where I'm drafting other guys as well, or some other guys. And so, trying to get me to look at the Slack, I see.
We're distracting you, man.
I
This
know you
is
guys are not,
we're
you guys are not helping me right now.
you're not good at multitasking, which means you're probably pretty good at your workplace. So kudos to you.
I wish I could say that I was good at multitasking constantly. Anyway,
Everything's off the hinges. I think
everything's up. You
ultimately
throw you guys are throwing me
I
off.
do wonder, yeah, this is what happens when you throw me in the mix too often. I've been a good boy for too long and now I'm just messing around with you. I will say I think Nate's probably loving this because if you are a Rainer truther, like you kind of already mentioned, like now you're getting him at a better price. So that is a really big positive. If you are all kind of all in on Rainer and you're cool with it, then like this is great. This is great news. So, you could see it both ways. And of this group, this is certainly the most interesting. I think Ja'Quarri Brown is super interesting because I think ultimately KJ Jefferson is obviously a 1 year guy,
For sure.
could get hurt. Do you see Brown come in? And honestly, Brown to me feels like a guy that needs some seasoning. He needs another year. I don't think he was super impressive at Miami last year, but he was a young guy, so you can kind of, obviously accept it and understand it. UCF's a good landing spot for him. It really does fit the mold. This is the smart decision that we want to see out of guys in the portal. And so I think that's a great fit. And certainly if he's available in like supplemental drafts, like this is a guy I would 100% draft and stash and be fine with wasting a roster spot for a year.
I agree, because again, his dual threat ability very much fits what Gus Malzahn's going to want out of his quarterbacks. Like, again, he's had games of 64 rushing yards, 87 rushing yards, and 57 rushing yards over the last couple of years, and that's in an offense at Miami where they didn't really want to run the quarterback a whole ton over there. So like you get him in a Gus Malzahn system where he is not afraid to run him, I think Brown could absolutely be a good play for the next year. Again, only dynasty value. Don't go drafting him this year. Now he could be interesting if he's clearly the backup option this year and you're in like looking at a waiver wire situation where KJ Jefferson gets hurt, like he could pop right into that system, probably do pretty well. The
I
other,
think
go ahead.
Brown and Schley are guys that I think are like priority adds if the starter gets hurt. There's zero value to them in redraft or best balls, but like if God willing something happens to the starter preseason,
I think "God
priority.
forbid" is the phrase you were looking for there. Not God willing.
Oh yeah, God for oh yeah, especially since it's my Hokies. See, now I'm messing myself up. God forbid something happens, right? Like those guys are very valuable. But yeah, like Schley fits that mold too. Like if something happens to a starter, these guys to me immediately have some value because they're great fits and great offenses, good decision making, and Schley gets to go home to East Coast a little bit. Good for him.
Yeah, in case it wasn't clear, I don't remember if I actually directly said this, but Colin Schley, former quarterback at UCLA, former quarterback at Kent State, headed over to Virginia Tech. Okay, pretty much already gave you the breakdown there. Probably going to be a backup to, or actually not probably, definitely will be a backup to Kyron Jones. How dare I say that of the future Heisman winner, okay?
I don't make these decisions. Things happen, and I'm just here to report it. You know, just because there's 100 similarities to Jaden Daniels and Kyron Jones, I just report what I see, Jared.
Nope, I totally understand. A couple other guys we'll touch on here. TJ Tiller, another guy that I think is not a this year play, but a kind of a future play. Full disclosure, friend of the company. He did an interview with our friend Brandon Sanders back when he did the Future Freshman podcast for Campus of Canton. Tiller's a great guy, and I think his skill set fits Blake Anderson's offense extremely, extremely well moving forward. And then Jacoby Criswell, former quarterback out of North Carolina. Former quarterback at Arkansas, heading back to North Carolina now. This is just very unfortunate for guys like me who are Connor Harrell fans because they bring in Max Johnson, they're bringing back Jacoby Criswell. They're just kind of burying him on the depth chart at this point. And I think
The
this strikes me as Criswell is going for like a grad assistant job at some point, right? Like he's going back to Mack Brown.
hey, anytime you can get that UNC degree, you got to go do it, right?
Oh, for sure.
Question here would be, do you consider Harrell the backup or Criswell the backup?
That really kind of ends up being what it is. Like, does Criswell come back here thinking he can sit behind Max Johnson for 1 year, kind of get that one last ride next year? Or, like I said, is he coming back to just be on the roster because he likes Mack Brown as a coach, but he couldn't start there? And then he goes to Arkansas. Turns out you're bad, kid. And so you just go back to a staff that you like, and you might as well try to turn it into a grad assistant job where you could potentially work for them in the future. So,
Yeah, Criswell's a sad story, man. Like he seemed to have so much potential. He loses out a job to a top five NFL draft pick eventually, and just has made a couple decisions that, unfortunately, hopefully there's no regrets there and that he made them like on his own willing. But like that's tough. Tiller, to circle back real quick, Tiller, before we move to running back, Tiller is feels like a good fit. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, but I don't think he's much of a runner, but there's going to be volume there, and he seems like one of those better three-star type quarterbacks that have come out of high school, and that feels like a good fit as well. So some good decision making out of kids these days.
Yeah, no, again, his one game that he played for last year, he went 12 for 21, 117 yards, did throw an interception, and he carried the ball 3 times for -8 yards. So again, we're not talking about a guy that seems to be getting a ton of run per se. But again, I think given what I've seen out of high school and everything, given what he was talking about in his interview, that he fits this offense very, very well. Let's go talk about some running backs, okay? This is probably the position that has been the most active in this spring portal. And speaking of active guys, the saga of Penei Boone has been quite a up and down ride this entire offseason. Obviously, transferring out of the MAC, you hate to see it. He goes to Louisville. I personally wasn't really in on him much at Louisville. I'm already kind of iffy on him transferring back up to the Power Four, considering he wasn't super great at Maryland the last time. He was in the Power Four, obviously, a couple years older now, a couple more years of experience. Good to see. Apparently, he's lost a ton of weight in the last couple of years, which was really, really good to see for sure. But he was supposed to go to Kentucky this past week. Like, apparently, he was down between Kentucky and Georgia. And then, of course, he ends up going to neither of those schools. Apparently, there's some academic issues keeping him from going to Kentucky. So, therefore, he now, of course, ends up at UCF. And this kind of begs the question, one, what does Boone's value become at this point? And then two, how does this affect RJ Harvey, a guy that, has been drafted as RB6? I had as high as RB4 in my rankings. Kay, how do you feel about this UCF backfield at this point?
Let's just knock out Boone. I don't think Boone has really any sort of value in any sort of format currently. But I do think he'll play enough to hinder Harvey, right? Like I think this RB group is really solid to great. I mean, really, really good ultimately in the top 12 to 15. I had Harvey like 7 or 8. It'd be crazy to keep him there. Considering the group of players there, you have to think that he moves to, for me at least, he's moving to like 10, 11, 12. Solid group. This is not like a Dylan Edwards to Kansas State type move, right? This is and not gonna hurt Giddens. That did not hurt Giddens ultimately. This hurts him. But I think ultimately we're not Boone fans. Like, he's gonna be a thorn in the side, and ultimately Harvey is a guy that sees a little bit of a dinged up, value, but still should be fine. This offense is gonna be really, really good. He's just gonna have to battle it out for some touchdown equity, but I think it'll be fine.
The other major difference probably between like this and like the Kansas State situation, right, is that this is Boone's last year pretty much, right? That's what we were just discussing in the Slack that threw me off basically. But like I kind of did the math because the tweet that they put out when he transferred there said, oh, he's got 2 years of eligibility left. And like I did the math and I'm like, no, not really, because he's played 10 plus games in 3 years, which means he only has 1 real year of eligibility. Now he has not taken a red shirt, which means technically he could redshirt this year. It'd be Harvey's year, and then maybe it's Boone's year next year. And that's potentially what could happen. Again, we'll see how the NCAA tries to enforce some of these multi-time transfers and stuff like that. Who knows what goes on with all of that kind of stuff. But in terms of how this affects Harvey, like, I'm of the opinion that I'm not. I obviously, like you said, Kate, it's impossible not to bump down Harvey. Like, I can't have him in my top four RBs anymore, but I'm not moving him down like that much. Like currently I have him RB9. I could probably convince myself to move him down a little bit more, but like I'm not moving him outside my top 15. This is a guy that almost won spring camp MVP. Clearly a guy that Gus Malzahn absolutely loves. 1,400 yards last year, 16 touchdowns on the ground. This is not a dude that was just like, he was not like a Blake Corum last year, right? Where, 1,000 yards and 20 plus touchdowns, clearly just way, getting way more touchdowns than he should have. Like, he was doing the work on the ground. Like, 1,400 yards. I think he gets somewhat close to that again this year. Obviously, Boone will probably take away some of that. But at the same time, like, 1,000 plus yards pretty easily, I would say. 10 to 12 plus touchdowns again. Like, that's a CFF running back. Like,
Do you have
regardless.
a, is he below Taj Brooks now?
In terms of my rankings,
Yeah.
yes, he actually
Isn't
is.
that amazing how college fantasy works?
Yes,
Because
for those of you who don't know, a little context here. Kay and I had had quite the debate in our CFF Slack a couple of weeks ago, or it was months ago at this point, right? Where like
shoot, yeah, it was
we
months
went,
ago.
it was we were talking about like I was like I would never take Brooks over Harvey, and well, now here we are.
So yeah, full circle here too, and I never said this out loud, but so I'll do it now. Now that I'm back out in front, I believed it. I was totally in on Brooks over Harvey, but you made a really good case in our Slack conversation of like why you would consider Harvey over Brooks. I kind of slept on it for a while, weeks and weeks passed, and the more I'm in drafts, the more I'm like, I'm gonna take Harvey here. I'm not gonna take Brooks. So I didn't tell you this because why would I ever admit defeat? But I was leaning Harvey over Brooks for sure. I never updated it in the rankings because I didn't want everybody to know. Now I'm back, baby. We got Brooks over Harvey. It doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there, Jared.
No, I totally understood. That was the CFF gods coming in and being like, hey, we're gonna throw you a bone here. And again, who knows what happens in the future with Boone and Harvey here. Again, given how crazy Boone's adventure this offseason has been so far, who knows if this is even the end of it. Another running back we could discuss here, Kay. Marquez Cooper. Finally got a landing spot for him, and it's the one we've been kind of theorizing for a long time. Again, formerly at Ball State, formerly Kansas State before that. He is now reuniting with Sean Lewis over at San Diego State University. And obviously, I tweeted this out as soon as the news broke. This was probably the best case scenario in terms of what we could expect for CFF. If Marquez Cooper went to any other coaching staff, I think it would have been hugely up in the air of like, all right, does he become the guy? Is he just a backup there? Like, how does he actually fit into that system? We know for a fact Sean Lewis likes Marquez Cooper. Sean Lewis typically goes with a committee situation for his running back situation with his running back room, and Cooper was the guy to break that. My question that's kind of lingering in the back of my mind here, right, is can Cooper break that mold again? Right? Because San Diego State, we all kind of assumed with the guys that they have there, and they do have a pretty loaded running back room for a Mountain West team, they were headed towards a committee this offseason. Now, Cooper comes in, obviously experienced with the coaching staff. I have no doubt he'll probably lead this running back room. My question just becomes, how much do I trust him to break away enough to where he's a CFF running back? What do you think, Kay?
So this is tough. I like this obvious one, right? Sean Lewis, Marquez Cooper. I don't think this is a committee. I think they have a bunch of guys that are just guys, older guys that have never really done a whole lot. This group has been just really weak at a school that has loved to have star running backs, right? San Diego State has some really fun CFF running backs. So my question is not like, hey, is Cooper going to get the majority of the carries? I do believe that full-heartedly. My question is like, how valuable actually is that? Because I do think this offense could struggle in year one. You know, AJ Duffy was the considered starting quarterback, but like, I think there's people out there that think, like Froton was talking about on the Fantasy Points podcast, like that he has struggled slash not look great, that like maybe they go to the portal to find an option there. So I'm not really thrilled about the offense. And you wonder, like, how much of a hit does that take on Cooper, right? Like, I was talking to my buddy Andrew Katz about this, our buddy Andrew Katz on Burning the Red Shirt this past week. And like, he made a really good point. Like, Cooper ran for 1,000 and had his problem is he ran for 1,000 but didn't get any touchdowns. And I could see that happening again. So I think that could happen here. The question really becomes then, like, how much does his ADP boost? It should 100% boost now that we know the spot.
For sure.
But how far up is it? So, you know, this is not a guy I would take in the top 7-8 rounds easily, and probably even further than that. But it is nice to see more smart decisions.
Okay. Where do you have Marquez Cooper in your rankings right now? I'm curious.
Dude, I need to, you know, you're hitting me here. I'm going to look real quick. I haven't updated it. So,
because I got him RB50 right now. Does that sound kind of right to you?
That feels fine. You know, like, to me, RB50 is like this weird group of like running backs, right? Like, Rocket Sanders, Ches Malusi, Corey Kiner, Parker Jenkins.
You got Ches Malusi all the way down at RB 50?
Yeah, 54, man. I'm not a big Malusi guy. And maybe that's a little bit low, but I'm not a big Malusi guy. So, but that's that realm of player. Montrell Johnson, Jarquez Hunter.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, that's around the range I would be okay with, yeah.
Probably around 50, you know, like, because I think Hunter and Johnson are kind of in the same boat. They're going to get probably the most carries on the team. Offense could struggle, tough schedules that kind of diminish how good the offense is going to be. I would have no problem putting him in there in that same range.
So, all right. Yeah, I could totally see that. So another name we can talk about here, Davin Booth, the former running back out of Utah State, heading over to Mississippi State. I've been very clear. I'm not usually a big fan of G5 guys going up to the Power 4. Doesn't typically work out here, but I guess I'm slightly interested in, because you asked me, Kay, like when we were discussing Penny Boone to UCF versus Rashad Amos to Mississippi State, and you noted quite right that I was a little bit more positive on Rashad Amos going to Mississippi State than Penny Boone going to UCF. And to me, the difference is that Mississippi State's got nothing at running back right now, like quite literally just nothing. Jaquavius Marks transfers out. Simeon Price was a guy that I kind of liked. He's transferred out. They have Kayvon Lee still, the former Penn State running back, but like, yikes. Seth Davis is a guy that's a young guy that's currently injured right now. I'm not sure how long he's out for. Jeffrey Pittman's a guy. He ran for almost 300 yards for them last year. But Davin Booth coming in, 800-yard rusher in the Mountain West last year. I can't remember what his size is and everything, but like, are you slightly interested 5'10", here?
5'10", 205.
5'10", 205. Thank you for looking that up for me.
You know, it depends on the price. What a cop-out answer. Depends on the price. Like, I think there are receivers that I'm like, yeah, I will throw a dart at towards the end. You do make a good case here, right? There really isn't anyone at Mississippi State that feels challenging. He was underutilized at Utah State, 120 carries, 805 yards, 6 touchdowns, a little bit of usage in the passing game. You know, so I'm not against it. That should be a good offense to invest in. if he's cheap enough, if he's in the 20s, I don't have a problem with that draft. I'm not going to necessarily draft him every single time he makes it to round 23, but like,
no, fair enough.
I can see why people would like him. A good spot, good decision. I wonder if that's going to just stay the case because, like, if you're Mississippi State, are you thrilled with your running back room if Da'Vonn Booth is your number one and then there's a bunch of randoms at 2, 3, 4? That doesn't feel like a competitive running back room from an SEC standpoint, but they could also be punting the year in a sense and not necessarily be super concerned about it. Running back is not the most valuable of positions, you know, as Mox would say, right? Like, why would you invest a ton of money at a running back? You should do it at other places. So maybe that's the angle they're going with. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. A couple more running backs that we'll kind of touch on here. Akechor Toscano, the Ole Miss running back, true freshman last year, a guy that really several of us here at Campus Canton thought could end up being the RB2 for Ole Miss last year as a true freshman, just ended up not doing really much. And now with Ole Miss adding guys like Ja'Cory Merritt and bringing back Henry Parrish, it's pretty clear that Roscano's not in their future plans. He's hit the portal now. I still think he's a guy talented enough that I'm interested to see where his landing spot is, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere where we're probably going to have to wait a year on him. And then last running back here, the winner of the Do Just Give It Up award is DeMarcus Bowman, the running back out of UCF, formerly of Florida, and Clemson before that. If you're still waiting on DeMarcus Bowman to do anything, I don't know what to tell you, man. You got Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, Riscano's interesting from like a dynasty standpoint. You wonder, like, is this a good time to buy? Because there's obviously some talent there. He just maybe feels like not loved, which I don't blame him for leaving them. Bowman not touching it. It's unfortunate. You know, you just hope these guys make decisions smartly. You know, like, dude, just go somewhere that you can get a good degree and plant yourself towards whatever future you have. It does not feel like it's football. So.
No, for sure. All right, let's hit up these wide receivers. We'll hit up the spring game, and then we'll get into some draft strategy talk here. Okay, wide receivers. Again, very mixed bag here of guys that we can talk about here. Probably the one I was looking forward to the most was Sam Brown going from Houston to Miami, Florida, reuniting with Shannon Dawson there, his former offensive coordinator when he was there at Houston. Should be a good fit for Brown. Obviously, Miami seemed like a school that needed a good third wide receiver. Isaiah Horton, while flash in the spring game, doesn't surprise me that when you have the opportunity to go and grab another school's wide receiver one to plug in as your potential number two or number three guy, you got to go and do it. How much does that make him a CFF value? I don't really know. Again, we know from last year that Cam Ward is willing to spread the ball around to different guys and be pretty productive if he's actually able to get things going. Sam Brown, familiarity with the offense is obviously a good thing, but I would only take shots on Sam Brown in like a best ball format, especially in, you know, wide receiver three in a pass heavy system here. So best ball only for me with Sam Brown right now, unless I start hearing more things there. Okay, what about you, man?
He had a really good start to last year with, I mean, Donovan Smith, as much as I like him, like that's not the best quarterback to catch passes from.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Somebody jokingly was like, Miami is celebrating getting a receiver transfer whose biggest play was getting beat up by Joseph Manjack on the sidelines, which I find funny. I'm not super in on Sam Brown, but I think, you know, I only had a few minutes to prepare. Thanks, Jared. On the show sheet, but I do think we're going to talk like that third running back theory or third receiver theory. And Sam Brown fits that mold to me, like depending on where he's being taken. But if he's mid to late 20s in drafts, like I love him as an option because all it takes is one of those top two receivers at Miami to go down and immediately his value goes up. Cause I have been very impressed with Cam Ward, feel pretty good about him, all things considered. And so that feels like the right spot for him is like a kind of a late round flyer. But I don't know, man, his game log is, I've seen him play it. I'm not like, I think he's a solid, good receiver. And then his game log is sneaky better than I realized. He had three 100 yard games in the first five, UTSA, Rice and Texas Tech. So not slouches by any means. So we'll see. I mean, he'll have a significantly better quarterback throwing him to him. So, but I definitely agree. It's like a kind of a late round type guy for me currently.
Yeah, again, I would consider him the number one, number two guy if, you know, he didn't have Xavier Restrepo and Jacoby George ahead of him, which are also two really solid receivers. Like, Miami's receiver group here now is, in my opinion, one of the best three in the country. Like, they did a really good job kind of building this group up the last couple of years.
Yep.
Another award to give out here for the biggest, like, confusing moment in CFF the last couple of weeks. Zachary Franklin, apparently still around, apparently was able to enter the portal when pretty much all of us thought that, like, he was gone. The beat writers thought that he was gone. He was listed as a guy going to the NFL draft. Apparently not. And, you know, there's some school of thoughts here, like, oh, Zachary Franklin, like, who knows where he could end up, right? Like, multi-year 1,000-yard wide receivers don't grow on trees, as Nate Marquis said when this happened. And I'm like, yes. But what tells you over the last 2 years that Zachary Franklin is in a place right now in his life where he can just go and settle down at a new school and you can feel like that you can count on him? Like, he did absolutely nothing at Ole Miss. This is a guy that has been rumored for a while, has not always been the most reliable teammate. And
what happened last year? Do we even know really what happened last year?
It's very unclear, but again, just a lot of rumors of just, like, not being the easiest guy to work with for the most part. And again, you can see it again, right? Like, clearly nobody knew what his intentions were coming out of this year. Everybody just assumed he was off to the NFL, but now apparently he's back in the portal. I don't know how well this is going to end out for him. It could be one of those situations where he's trying to get a extra year of eligibility, a la like Talia Tagovailoa, right? Where they think they have the extra year of eligibility, so they enter the portal, and then the NCAA comes in and is like, nah, dude, you're done. So
I wouldn't be concerned about, like, the eligibility piece to it. I mean, if he lands at a real, I don't know how he would be eligible, but we'll see. Looking at his career and stuff, I would be interested at the right spot, but again, throw into the bucket of, like, a late round receiver that I'd be interested in. That's a cop out, but, like, still at the same time, like, there's so many of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with good reason, you could say his ADP is never going to be higher than the 25th round. So it needs to be a good spot. If it's anywhere that's he's not going to have a chance to compete to be a receiver one, then I don't want any piece of that. There's just too much baggage, whether that's injury issues where he's not the same player or off field issues where he's not maybe a good teammate. That's a stretch at that point. So I need a clear direction to a possible receiver one for me to care, which it feels like even you would admit a little bit that you'd be interested if he goes somewhere awesome with that type of thing.
I don't know. It would have to be like, I'd have to be like over the moon about it for even me to be considerate.
What if he went to like Bowling Green? Would you be in on a Zachary Franklin in the MAC?
I'm going to take the cop-out answer. Depends on his price. If people go crazy with it, right? Like, I'm not going to touch it.
It would have. I mean, Zachary Franklin at Bowling Green is not, again, not getting past round 20. Like, it's not going earlier than round 25.
I don't know, dude. Like, you would be surprised how people can react to some of these transfer portal news. So, we'll see. Quick one here. Keon Graves, former wide receiver at Ohio State, a guy we've been waiting to transfer for a while now. He ends up at Cal. I personally don't think we see a ton of him this year. They seem pretty set with their starting wide receiver group of Tobias Merriweather, Tron Grizel, and Mikey Matthews, the former true freshman last year, transferred over from Utah. So he probably gets rotated in a bit, but I doubt he ends up being a guy that we're looking at as a CFF option here. The next two I am interested to talk about because when it comes to Fresno State, probably one of the bigger takeaways we had this spring was the fact that Jalen Moss, who many of us would consider the best wide receiver on Fresno State, was being moved to probably the most lucrative position for Fresno State, and that was the slot. He played outside last year. They lose guys like Jalen Gill and Eric Brooks, who played in the slot last year, so it looked like Moss's time to shine. Well, then Fresno State goes and adds Raylan Sharp and Shadon James, two FCS wide receivers, productive FCS wide receivers, I might add. Sharp had 73 catches for 991 yards and 7 touchdowns last year. Shadon James, 102 catches for 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. Like, these guys are no slouches. And the jump from FCS to Mountain West, not nearly as big as, you know, going from the FCS to the Power Four. So I think these guys are legit guys coming in, and Fresno State expects to contribute. I mean, Jackson Moore, the writer for the Fresno State site over at 247, had this to say in his article. This spring, quote, the Bulldogs utilized both Magdalena and Jalen Moss as slot receivers. Delana and James are now projected to be the Bulldogs' primary weapons in the slot this year. Now, I think that that's potentially a bit of a jump in judgment for Moore, but obviously he knows more about the scene than I do, so maybe he's been directly told that by staff members and they want to move Moss back outside. Regardless, Moss, wide receiver 53, 13th round. Kay, are you still willing to take a shot on Moss?
Oh yeah, 100%. This is one of those things where I'm not going to buy into the beat writer stuff. You know, how much do these guys really have? Like, I think we give them potentially more benefit than we should. It is certainly possible that, hey, Fresno State got two guys that are clearly slot receivers.
Very clearly.
They don't like Moss, right? Like, they're both like 5'8", 5'9", and don't break a buck 75, right? So, like, there's very clearly, they're very much slot guys. So you could look at it from that angle. Jalen Moss was like fairly good last year, you know, like,
oh, very good.
So like, what does that say? I don't know. Like, what does that say about your development? What as a coaching staff and your receivers coach, if like a guy that was pretty solid is supposed to be the slot guy. And then you say, you know what, we're going to go nab a couple FCS guys because we're not confident in you anymore. I don't know. I'm just not here. I'm not willing to buy it. This is like a Rainer thing for Nate real quick. I gladly will take Jalen Moss, and I appreciate people, you know, lowering him down the ADP.
No, for sure. And like, here's the thing. I don't know if this is less on Moss and more of like, they don't trust the rest of their outside wide receivers, right? Because they're moving Moss to the slot and everything, because they lost so much in the slot. And then they got to look at the outside guys behind him, guys like Josiah Freeman, guys like Tim Greer, and guys like that, and they're like, ooh, it might be the better way to go about this is to go grab some decent slot options out of the portal and then move Moss back outside, because he's better than the rest of the guys we have out there.
That's not an awful angle, Jared. I'm not gonna lie, that's not an awful angle. 6'1", 168 is what Moss is listed at.
Ooh, he's a skinny boy.
He's skinny. I'd be hard pressed to. The height is the reason why I think it's actually possible. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to worry about it from my perspective. I'll take the extra couple rounds of value, but I don't know. This FCS to Mountain West is enough of a jump for me to be a little bit cautious and need to see it before I believe a beat writer.
I would definitely put James and Sharp on a watch list in your leagues, though, so that like a couple weeks in, if Fresno State's targeting either one of those guys, you go and grab them.
Definitely.
Last wide receiver we'll touch on pretty briefly here, I would say. Kevin Green, wide receiver out of Arizona, a guy I've liked the last couple of years. He's going into his third year now, I believe. He was really set to be the Jacob Cowing replacement for Arizona. He is now in the portal, well, I guess because he doesn't like the new coaching staff. Obviously, Jed Fish left. He's not going to Washington. I'm hoping he goes to Washington because, again, he was a guy that clearly liked Jed Fish for the most part the last couple of years. It's just one I'm throwing out there. It's a school that does not have a ton of options at receiver. Obviously, they got Denzel Boston, who we'll talk about here in a second, but then Gosh Jackson and Jeremiah Hunter, and then pretty much nobody behind those guys. And so I think he could go in there and immediately contribute for them as well. Kay, you got any quick thoughts on Kevin Green?
Not a ton. You know, Washington maybe makes sense, like you say, because there's like some coaching continuity, but like I think that room is deep enough where he kills his value in redraft if he goes.
Oh, there. For redraft, for sure. I agree.
But from a dynasty perspective, there is some benefit, right? With some coaching familiarity. And so not a ton there. You know, that's not going to move the needle until 2025.
We'll definitely see. All right. Enough spring portal talk. Let's go talk about this Washington spring game. The only spring game that really happened this past week. We're finally kind of finishing these up. And really, first of all, shout out to Dan Raley over at Inside the Huskies, the Sports Illustrated website for the University of Washington. He did a phenomenal job covering kind of the main takeaways here. And really, there were kind of two things that he wanted to point out. One, a lot of us have kind of talked about the potential of, like, you know, it's Will Rogers and Demon Williams Jr., the true freshman quarterback there. Can Demon Williams push Will Rogers for that starting spot? At least according to this spring game, it looks like it's Will Rogers' job. Demon Williams went 4 for 14 to start the game, including a pick six, and then finished 7 for 17 for 42 yards, a touchdown, and then that pick six as well. Meanwhile, Rogers 14 for 25, 154 yards, touchdown, looked way more comfortable. So it looks like Rogers is your starting quarterback for Washington this year, which I think that's pretty much what most of us were expecting. And then the other major thing is that a lot of people, I might add, were drafting Jeremiah Hunter very highly in drafts. And I still think he's going pretty highly in drafts. I'll have to look up the ADP here in a second while you talk about it, Kay. But favorite target on the day, Denzel Boston, a guy that, again, I talk about that steady drumbeat. That's what you got to listen for in the spring. A guy that constantly gets mentioned in all these reports. Denzel Boston fits that bill. He has been a guy that the team has been talking about a ton. And he comes out during the spring game, 7 catches, 127 yards, and a touchdown. Just looked great on the day. I personally will be investing in a lot more Boston than Jeremiah Hunter this year, who I believe Hunter went 2 catches for 33 yards and a touchdown in the game yesterday. So, Kay, your thoughts, man. What do you think about this Washington spring game?
I think it's encouraging for Williams at quarterback. I never suspected he would win the job, but the fact that he's like kind of battled it out enough to like go into the spring game in contention is positive for sure. You know, the receiver stuff is super interesting because it feels like a good offense, obviously, to want. Boston feels like the guy. So like, it feels like we're getting the cheapest we're going to get Boston at this point. So I think the biggest takeaway is, hey, maybe we're looking at the wrong guy at receiver. And Jeremiah Hunter was a guy I've taken before, but this certainly seems like it's Boston, and it certainly seems like his price is as low as it's going to get. And it's pretty low, I think, right? So that's the biggest takeaway, is Boston.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at his ADP. I think there's a glitch in my ADP sheet right now because he's not coming up. I know for a fact he's been going in drafts for sure, because I know Nate's been drafting him pretty much everywhere. But Jeremiah Hunter is going wide receiver 30 right now. Guys, we got to nix that. That needs to come way, way down. Again, maybe he has some value as a wide receiver too in this offense, but like, I think if you're drafting Jeremiah Hunter right now, you need to stop doing that, pretty much.
Yeah, I've noticed a difference in his, what's his name? Jeremiah Hunter's ADP in this champion series. He's seemingly going lower and lower. And I was like, it's one of those times where you're like, oh, what does everybody else know that I don't? So like, you start to not take him because he keeps falling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think if you take him, you have to take him at the very, very end of drafts.
All right, I'm trying to refresh my ADP sheet real quick to see if I can get Boston's ADP. But regardless, I think we can get on over to the fun part, okay? Let's start talking some CFF draft strategy. And again, I think the best place really to start is, well, the start, right? The start of drafts. Again, I kind of mentioned this at the top of the show. A lot of people have been DMing, like, what's the best way to start CFF drafts? And I have my thoughts, right? And I have what I call the boring, but I think correct answer. And that is that there is no real right way to start. It heavily depends on you as a CFF player. Knowing how to start involves knowing what you're going to do at the end of drafts. And what I mean by that, you need to know what positions you are the weakest at. You have to look at, or how do I go about this? Basically, what I mean is that, like, whatever position you're weakest at in terms of your ability to scout those players, your ability to find value later on in the draft, whether that's looking at the player pool and seeing how quickly it dries up in your opinion, or just looking at ADP, seeing which guys fall to good values later on, whatever position you think you're going to be weakest at, that's the position you need to target really early on in draft. So like, for example, last year, I did not trust my ability to find high-end CFF wide receivers in later rounds. And so a lot of the drafts that I did really, really well in, I targeted wide receiver early on. I would go wide receiver 2 out of the first 3 picks, and then that third pick would either be a quarterback or running back, depending on the draft. The running back class was far more unknown. There wasn't a lot of top end guys, but there was a lot of guys that would kind of fall later in drafts that I liked. A couple of examples that paid off for me: RJ Harvey, Kyrie Robinson, Taj Brooks. These were guys that I had plenty of shares of last year that I could get in round 15, 20 plus a lot of times. And so I trusted my ability to kind of find that value. So typically I get wide receiver early and go to those other positions later. This year, it's changed, right? I've done some self-scouting and I've looked at the player pool and I kind of identified that the running back group is strong this year. Less value, and everybody knows that, so less and less value falls in these drafts the further along we've gone in this year. In this year, I've noticed that like guys that I used to be able to get in the 10th, 12th round are going off in like the 6th, 7th round now. And so people have adjusted, and with that, I've adjusted to say like, all right, well, I don't trust my ability to find guys of value at running back later on. And so this year now, I'm drafting wide receivers a lot more later on, because not only do I see some guys that I like, but also I looked at last year, I looked at the wide receivers I was able to grab late, and I was able to identify why those picks worked. Why was I able to find some of these values, like a guy like LaJonte Wester last year, right? A guy that would go 10 plus, round 10 plus a lot of times. I had a ton of shares of him last year. And I'm like, okay, once again, going system, going volume, just chasing that and seeing what kind of guys fit that bill as they go down there. That's the way I go. I'm rambling a lot here, Kay, but that's kind of like my answer to people of like, if you want just a boring, but like my honest thoughts on how to start a draft, it is really just, you gotta know yourself. You gotta know how you feel about the player pool as a whole and figure out what do you trust yourself to identify later on in order to identify what to hit early. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think we're on the same page. Like, to me, I draft more based on like how I feel drafting at the end of drafts. Like, if there's players that I feel like are really good options that I think will provide weekly production to me, like, I will look at, I kind of work backwards. I think my buddy Katz has said it too. Like, hey, like, I work backwards when I draft. Like, I say, what do I like at the very end? And then say, okay, well, like, I need to help out those other positions or whatever at the beginning. And so I agree. Like, for me, I feel really good about receivers at the end. You know, those dart throw flyer types, I have a decent size bucket of guys that I like to rotate in and draft, et cetera. And same with quarterbacks. I think we've talked about in previous shows, like, there's a ton of quarterbacks that are great. So I very rarely take quarterbacks at the beginning. It feels like I can find guys that I like at different rounds, mid to late. Running backs to me are the one where it's like the production is pretty much set in stone. And so I like to take them early because I don't think I'm going to be good enough at picking those random big time running back options late. So yep. We're on the same page there. I was going to say this and then I read the show sheet and I think you 100% agree. This isn't NFL. Like, ultimately, the best way to win your best ball leagues is by picking good players.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid, but like, there's not a set strategy that's going to work the best. There's no rules that you have to do. Like in NFL, you have to stack your quarterbacks, right? That's not the case. Like, there's too many outliers, random things that happen, weird injuries happen, and that type of thing. And so I think you ultimately need to diversify your portfolio as much as possible. If you're doing like we do, I do this champion series where it's 12 drafts and you obviously each league is a winner, but like there's a collective winner. I had Jaden Daniels in like 9 of 12 champion series drafts last year. I got 7th place because I took DeCorian Clark everywhere. I took Zachary Franklin late. And I also took Franklin first or second round before the portal. So give me a little grace, Jared. So I don't think you should go heavy on one guy, because I went super heavy on Jaden Daniels. And what happened? I got 7th out of 12. Like, if I could nail the Heisman Trophy winner that outscores everybody by 10 fantasy points a game, and I still, best case scenario, is 7th place, like, then I think that's proof that you should diversify more than you think. Tight ends, right? Like, if you hammered the same tight ends last year, every single draft, you could have gotten burned and gotten zeros across the board by week six because there were so many tight end injuries. So pick good players, diversify, and like you said at the beginning, know your weakness or maybe know what you're not comfortable with in terms of late rounds. So kind of cop-out answers, but genuinely, you know, I don't know if people have had the time or knowledge to dig into so many of these drafts and say, hey, this is the best way to handle it. Like people have in the NFL. There's just so many people that cover NFL stuff that they have that type of sample size and stuff like that. But it's certainly fun to discuss.
I mean, I think one, it's going to change year to year, right? Because like the running back group of 1 year is going to be different than the other. And like, even like, not just from a draft perspective, just by results perspective, like there's not going to be another quarterback like Jaden Daniels, right? There's not going to be another, or at least not for a while, I don't expect, because he like outscored the QB2 by almost 100 points last year, just to give you an idea of just how nuts Jaden Daniels was. But again, I agree with the kid. Again, it's not the answer that people want, because people want just, oh, I would go RB, 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 or I would go two wide receivers and an RB or something like that. Like, no, it fully depends on you as a drafter and what you're able to accomplish later on. Like you said, Kay, there's just too many players. There's too many teams. There's too many things that can change between now and really even by the time the season starts. And shoot, when the season does start, like things constantly change from in there. Like, again, you can get lucky. Like I did with Dallin Holker last year. I had Dallin Holker everywhere. I drafted him in a ton of leagues. Guess what? That helped me out a ton. Let me tell you that. But again, like you said, Kay, you could also be like you, where you drafted Zachary Franklin and it just completely killed you in a ton of leagues. So again, that's just the honest thoughts of it. It's not the answer a lot of people want, but let's give the people what they do want, Kay. And I want to run through a couple of kind of different stars. We'll go just for the first three rounds, just kind of keep this simple and everything. But I have up on the screen there on the left side there. I don't know how well you can see it, Kay, but it is the ADP of all the players combined there, right? So you can see like Ashton GNT, Ollie Gordon, Tet McMillan, stuff like that. And you can go all the way down to really the mid third round. Again, there's a couple more players after that, so you can ask me to scroll down if you need to, Kay. But we'll go, if you're going to start RB, 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 Kay, what do you look for? And of the players you can kind of see here, like pick one running back from the first round, one running back from the second round, and one running back from the third round. And tell me like why that would be your ideal start if you were going three running backs in a row.
So this last champion series draft, I did four out of the first five picks were running backs. So maybe that's a better way to look at it.
Okay.
So I took Ollie Gordon, second pick. I took Damian Martinez, third round, second pick. Mekhi Hughes, fourth round, 11th pick. And then Manungai, fifth round, second pick. Something like that to me feels really good because one, Ollie Gordon, superstar, Damian Martinez worked out super well. Even if you said it was like Malik Sherrod, you know, because Martinez went to Miami, maybe he doesn't have the same ADP, but like Malik Sherrod or like CJ Baxter, even I think I would want to target guys that are just like proven hot commodity stars. Because what's going to end up happening is I'm not taking a running back for a long time. So fifth round, I had four running backs, one quarterback, and that was it. I didn't take another running back till round 14. So like I went receiver, receiver, quarterback, receiver, 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 tight end. So like all that to say is like you better feel good about those receivers in that kind of like 4 to 10th round range. There are some of these guys that I actually really like in this range. They're high upside, high risk, right? Like Elijah Badger, Isaiah Bond. I like Bond, but like we haven't actually seen it yet. So to me, there is some risk. So that's kind of how I attacked it. I love Mekhi Hughes. I love Manungai with that schedule. Damian Martinez is a no-brainer in the Miami offense now. So that's kind of how I took it. It was like guys that just felt so like set in stone, great options that, you know what, let me just lock it in and move on to receiver and quarterback and see what happens.
I would pretty much agree with you on that. Again, if you're going to hit running back early, you aren't going to be hitting it for a while after that point. And that's kind of the whole point of it, right? Like you want to feel very solid about your group and then not worry about it for a while. And so by the time you're having to kind of stretch for guys at the position, like if you're like myself, where you don't trust those picks nearly as much, you're only having to do like what? Maybe two or three of those guys rather than, again, if you don't take running back early and you're having to do that with maybe six, seven guys of your running back room and you don't feel nearly as good about it. If I were doing running back, I would basically go in with the mindset of two solid top end guys and then an upside guy, right? So like if say, again, this isn't super realistic, but like say I got like Amarian Hampton, Devin Neal falls to me in the second round, and then I would feel much more comfortable with drafting like a Cedric Baxter as my third running back at that point. Given the upside that Baxter has, I would be like, okay, two top end guys that I can rely on week to week most likely, and then just Baxter, he's expensive for the risk that he potentially poses, but man, if he hits, yeah, I'm going to have an absolutely unstoppable running back room.
You know what's funny is in this last draft, Clint drafted Amarian Hampton at 8th, Devin Neal in the second round, and then he took Malik Sherrod at 308 with Baxter on the board. So he could have done exactly what you're talking about. So I don't think it's completely unrealistic.
But you could also go with like what Clint did there, right? Where again, I think, again, if you got a start of Hampton, Neal, and Sherrod, and you just want to lock in three top end guys, like maybe Sherrod doesn't have the ceiling that like Baxter would, if we know for a fact Baxter is the number one guy for Texas this year. But you know, you're still locking in three great guys there. They're going to be much higher floors than anybody you're going to get later on. So that's kind of my thought on it. Again, I'm a bit more okay with 10. If I start three running backs, I'm willing to take the risk a little bit more. What about the opposite here, Kay? Wide receiver. I know for a fact you've done this already with one of your drafts. But so how do you kind of navigate going wide receiver heavy early on here?
You know, when I actually just did this. This is the one that I did the late round quarterback stuff with, but I think it works for all of them. I didn't purposefully go receiver, but like you're telling me that in the third pick, this is pre-spring game stuff, I took Tet McMillan, Joey Hobert, who is a top five receiver for me, and then Tez Johnson, who's a top seven receiver for me. Mm-hmm. I had them all by 303. I don't hate that at all. The problem is, man, you better be confident in these next guys, right?
Yep.
Harden at UCLA, Donovan Edwards at Michigan, Jaquavius Marks at USC, and then I took Tutin at Virginia Tech in the seventh round. So, like, I love it. If that falls to me, I'm in because I don't have to worry about receiver. Like, if those guys aren't in my lineup weekly, then, like, they got hurt, right? Yeah. Like, those feel as about as set in stone as possible. And so I don't have any issue with it. But like we kind of said at the top, right? Like you better be confident in those mid-round running backs, you know, the mid-single-digit round running backs. Because if you're not, then you're going to be taking weird players, maybe go too heavy at receiver, what have you. So I've done it. I didn't mind it one bit, but, you know, there is some risk in it because I think those four running backs I already mentioned, it's very possible that each of those guys are 9th, 10th round talents at best by the end of the 2024 season.
Yeah, for sure. And like looking at, like I'm kind of scrolling down here, looking at the end of the third round, like you see guys like Hughes, Sherrod, Cooley come off there. If you've spent your first three picks on wide receivers, your best case scenario, your number one running back is LaQuint Allen. Like maybe if you got that kind of tail end pick there of the fourth round, which I like LaQuint Allen, obviously. I like a lot of the guys in this range, but like the question marks start pretty quickly. Gavin Sawchuk, yeah. Donovan Edwards, Abu Sama, Quinshon Judkins, Mario Anderson, like Kyle Manungai. Like these are all guys that are clearly like there's a reason why they're in this next tier. And to me, if you start wide receiver, you better, like, four of your next five picks better be running backs. Like, you better start loading up on running backs very quickly after that point. Otherwise, you're going to be in for a bit of trouble.
Yeah, and then you better be confident quarterback, right? Because if you're taking four running backs in a row, you know, like, you're not taking a premium tight end, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably, and I did it because I didn't take a quarterback until round 18. So, like, then it becomes you better be really, then you're sacrificing quarterback, which is hard to do and it's hard to swallow. So Yeah, it is it's an interesting technique. It's not the one that I love the most, but I had a hard time based on my receiver rankings passing on Tez Johnson at 303. That's what it came down to. Because
Oh, for sure.
I could have taken Mekhi Hughes or Jordan James and loved it, but I thought Tez at 303 was about as no-brainer as it gets.
Nope, totally understand that. What about a little bit more balanced approach here? Two running backs, one wide receiver, or two wide receivers, one running back? Which would you kind of prefer, Kay?
Two running backs.
I agree.
I love receivers at the end, make a lot of sense for me. A lot of this is just straight, like, where are you picking in the draft?
Very true.
But I think ultimately, like, I will be totally cool with taking two running backs, super high floor types. Third round has some really interesting receivers. I know you love Will Pauling. That's a great spot for you at Will Pauling. I probably, though, if I'm going two running backs, I'm probably taking receiver in the first round. Or
Okay.
like maybe I have like the end of, maybe I have like the 10th, 11th, 12th pick, and I take one of those running backs there, and then the receiver in the second round type, like early second round types.
No, I can totally see it. Because again, like especially like Luther Burden and Torrey Horton, like those are guys that it feels hard to pass up on those guys when you're there in the first round. Like those, it what locked in for 120 plus targets, basically. You would think like it's hard to pass up on that. Although again, if you did wait to the second round, Joan Royals, Sean Atkins, Joey Hobert, Tez Johnson, I think like you could really build a strong team if you went like Amarian Hampton, Sean Atkins. Actually, I think I say this. I actually did do this recently in the last draft that I did, or the draft I'm in right now, where I went Amarian Hampton round one, Joan Royals round two, Malik Sherrard round three. Like that feels like a great start for me. I'm kind of balancing out getting top end guys at both positions there. Okay, you are notoriously a later round QB guy, so I'm already pushing you a little bit to even draft one quarterback in the first three rounds. But is there a scenario where you would draft a quarterback in the first three rounds? And then, crazier thought, is there a scenario where you would draft two quarterbacks in the first three rounds?
Yes, I am fine and open to taking one of the top three, which is obvious. Like for me, it's Salter, Brown, and Gabriel.
For sure.
Those three to me are clear. And I think people like McLeod in this Champ Series draft, McLeod went third and I took Gabriel at the end of the second. So I actually have done this. So yeah, I'm totally on board with taking one. I think it depends on draft position. Like, so we have a draft that is kicking off like by the time right when this airs, so I don't have any issue with it, right? Like I have the third pick with the Tet McMillan potential. I'm sure he'll be fine, right? Like it's probably overthinking it, but like I don't know. I'm gonna go GNT Gordon and then Salter. So like let's say I take Salter at the third pick overall. I take a flex guy in the second round, but what if Dylan Gabriel's there for me at 303? I don't know. Gabriel at 303 is an insane value. I would be hard pressed to pass on that. So that is the scenario where I take him. And then obviously anything beyond, right? Like if Gabriel or yeah, Gabriel starts to slip to mid to late third round for some reason, like I'm 100% in on that. But I think the most realistic scenario is like I said, right? Like you take a Salter at three or four in the first round, and then a guy like Gabriel lasts until that third round. Third, fourth, fifth pick, and you take them there. Is that kind of like, is that how you would do it too, or are you thinking differently?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Gabriel fall to the third round in any of my drafts, but I will say there is, I have one draft where I have taken two quarterbacks in the first two rounds. And that was when I had a late pick of Byron Brown as my first round quarterback. And then Dylan Gabriel fell to me at like the 2-6. And I was like, well, shoot, it's kind of hard to pass up on two guys that I consider first round quarterbacks. And one fell to me mid second. So again, did I don't know if I don't remember. I think I didn't love the way the rest of the draft kind of fell for me. So again, I probably wouldn't do that for sure in the future. But you know, it was hard to pass up, like you said, like when you can feel like you're grabbing two of the three elite guys at the position in the first two rounds, it is hard to pass up on that.
So if you were to grab in that draft, maybe when did you take your next quarterback?
I'd have
Or
to
like in
I can't remember.
my scenario of Gabriel in the early third, like when would you take that quarterback next?
I
That third
might
one.
take another quarterback within the top 12 rounds, but like it definitely would it would depend on who fell in like the round like 9 to 10, 11 range. Like say like I don't know, like something weird happens, right? Or sometimes Jackson Arnold falls to like the ninth round. and you're just sitting there like, how is this dude still on the board? Yeah, of course I'm going to take him at that point, right? But for the most part, like, no, I'll wait until, like, I've got pretty much my entire rest of my lineup set, and then I'm willing to go, okay, let's go grab some high upside guys, especially since, you know, that would be a prime scenario where I would go after a guy like, you know, Jalen Reynor, where I'm like, okay, a lot of risk here, but really, really high upside if he actually gets starting, and then I have three elite quarterbacks, so.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I think I did that late round quarterback draft and I did the article on it. I don't love it as a strategy. I don't think it's the worst idea, but like, again, you just have to pick players that are good. So like, does it matter when you take them if you have a good idea of who the good players are? Mm-hmm. I would say though, the best way to handle something like that is to draft a top three quarterback, right? Like take a Salter, Byron Brown, Gabriel type. Lock in, like, is Salter going to be your quarterback 11 of 12 weeks? Let's say 11 of 13 weeks. Let's say maybe 1 week he stinks, 1 week is a bye, right?
Yep.
I guess this year it's 2 bye weeks, but still, you get the idea.
It's 14 weeks, yeah.
14 weeks, so 12 of 14 or 11 of 14, whatever. I think that's a more convincing argument of a good strategy to say, hey, let me take Salter or Byron Brown at the top. And then I wait till round 18 to take a second quarterback. Like, to me, that is a more viable strategy. That's not that far off from that late round quarterback idea. But quarterbacks are tough because when you punt on them, you're punting on the position that has the biggest, absolute biggest upside of any of them. Mm-hmm. So you better be right or you're going to be in the dust.
Oh, absolutely. But also it's a scenario where if you get it right, you are either in first place in your league or you are in 12th place. Like, it is the kind of scenario where you want to be in.
Yeah, I think the argument and counterpoint here is, right, like you start two quarterbacks a week in all these best balls, right? You start two running backs, three receivers, and two or three flex positions. So you're telling me if I can lock in one of these, what is that, 2, 5, 7 to 8 running back receiver slots mm-hmm. weekly, I can start to lock in those and give myself maybe 8 options at quarterback for those 2 spots on a weekly basis. You know, that's why I did it, right? I toyed with it and to see, but that would be the counterpoint to that, would be like, well, like I only have to do this, I have to fill 2 spots weekly, but if I lock in everybody else, you just have to be almost kind of perfect when you do it that way.
No, I can totally see that. And honestly, this is a really good segue just to go into just punting positions in general, right? Like we talked quite a bit here about quarterbacks, but I think when it comes to like punting a position, right? Like you're uber confident in your ability to identify guys late, which again, first of all, if you're going to punt a position, you have to be very confident in your ability. And I would honestly say as well, like have some history of finding some late gems in drafts before. Like I would never suggest to a first year CFF player to punt on any position. Like you absolutely should be trying to get the best guys you can at any available position. And then after you got a couple years of experience under your belt, identify, all right, what have I done a good job with in the past? And then kind of maybe punt on that position in the future because you think you can repeat that success. But regardless, like there's a couple of things I would say, like kind of general guidelines on like what to do when you're punting a position. And Kay, you kind of touched on this in your article when talking quarterbacks, but I think it applies to any position that you go with. Whatever position you decide to punt on, you have to be willing to draft more than you typically would in any other draft, right? Like typical draft breakdown, Kay, you and I are on basically the same page here, right? We're in a 30 round draft. You're looking at what, 6 quarterbacks, 10 running backs, 10 wide receivers, 4 tight ends. Whatever position that you are punting on, I would add 2 to 3 more easily. If wide receiver and running backs, especially, like I might even add even more at that point, because again, there's so much variance sometimes, especially wide receiver. Like there's so much variance between different guys. You have to kind of hit a bigger scatter shot. Tight ends, I'd be willing to go up to 6, 7 tight ends if I'm punting tight end completely at the end there. Do you kind of agree with that?
I would say yes to everything but the tight ends. I think, you know, tight ends are so fickle. I would almost be like, you know what, I don't care about tight ends. Like I would have no issue if you said, you know what, I'm just gonna take 4 tight ends at the very end of the draft and just say screw it. Like I just do not care about this position, because that's a position that people invested in, myself included, last year, and injuries and just poor performance is, you know, rear their ugly heads and I got nothing out of it, right? And all the C2C guys, they almost basically say, like, these true freshmen that come in, like, these tight ends, like, who cares? Like, it's such a hard position to develop and predict who's going to do good that I'm like, I don't, you know, that's the one I'd be like, you know what? I don't care. I'll punt it and I'll still only take the four, right? Six to me is definitely too much. Five is fine. Four, I'd be okay with. Three, you only take, I think, if you take like an Aronde Gadsden type at the very top.
Yeah.
And you just, that's like a different style of way to do it. But yeah, I wouldn't completely punt a position probably, except for like tight end, because that's such a fickle one.
Well, see, I think the other way to kind of go about it from their case, kind of the other point you made in your article, which is taking advantage of the dual eligibility, right? Like maybe you take only three or four like legit tight ends, but then you go after a guy like Corey Dyches, Ben Brommer at Iowa State, Michael Harrison, Holden Willis even, right? Obviously, he's more expensive than the rest of these guys, but like that way you can kind of tell yourself like, okay, not only am I drafting a tight end, but I'm also drafting a wide receiver for my team as well. So you're kind of covering both of those positions at the same time. I've done this a couple of times. That's why I've grabbed quite a bit of Ben Brommer and Michael Harrison as well, because it is kind of something where you're like, okay, I'm getting a two for one here, right? Like I'm getting an additional wide receiver and a tight end. There's also running back wide receiver combos, guys that you can look at there. Jamal Haynes, obviously at Georgia State being probably the most prominent one this year, but Jacquez Stewart at Toledo, Chris Tyree technically at Virginia, Justin Marshall at Colorado State. A lot of them being wide receivers converted to running backs is kind of where they kind of get their value or their position eligibility from. So yeah, I would say that's kind of the way to kind of justify that. If you're not completely okay with grabbing five solo tight, like only tight ends, kind of justify a little bit more by grabbing a guy like Brommer or Harrison and be like, okay, well, I'm really drafting a wide receiver for my team, but also he gets tight end.
Yeah, I like the tight end receiver dual eligibility guys more than I do the running back receiver types. So I'd be more inclined to say, hey, like I'm going to take a Tet McMillan and a Jalen Royals at the top, Joey Hobert, maybe two of those types, and then wait a while and just draft 11 or 12 of them because I can take the dual eligibility types to kind of bleed into it. Running back, the dual stuff is like Jamal Haynes is like a legitimate option, but besides that, like Stewart's kind of stretching it. Tyree is 100% kind of a dart throw that we're all kind of predicting will have a huge role, but could very easily not. We've literally done the Chris Tyree thing for like 4 years now. And Justin Marshall, again, is like more of a late round dart throw. So like, you know, I would be more inclined to do it with the tight end receiver types than it would running back receiver types. But I do think that if you're going to punt any of these types of positions or kind of play that game with the roster size, then you have to have those positional eligibility guys in mind.
I definitely agree. And you kind of touched on the last point you're making there. All these guys are stretches. If you're punting a position, right, and you're going round 15 plus, 20 plus without taking your first one and everything like that, you got to be able to understand that you have to understand that every single one of these guys is a stretch to some degree, right? These guys are all going round 15 plus, 20 plus for a reason. If they're path to relevance was clear, they'd be going much higher. So like you got to be able to kind of sell yourself stories with every one of your picks you make at this position. Like this isn't a guy I'm picking to get me 15 fantasy points per game. Like that's not what I'm looking for here. If you're punting a position, you better be able to look at every one of your guys that you draft late and say like, no, this right here, this is the next Malik Washington. I don't care that his system has not produced a top end wide receiver. This guy's the best on his team. He's going to break the mold somehow, some way. Or like running back, right? Like Kyrie Robinson, you're sitting there like, okay, I'm going to take this guy. He is a veteran. He is in his sixth year of playing. He is a guy that the staff trusts and everything like that. I don't care that he's only gotten less than 14 fantasy points per game. Like this is the year where they're going to ride or die on him. You got to be able to sell yourself stories with every single one of your picks. You're not picking guys that you're thinking, oh, these are safe picks. You punt the position, you better be hitting for a grand slam every single time.
Yeah, I think the telling like the game theory and like the predicting what will happen in terms of like the UVA thing is very smart, right? Like you have to do that or else you're going to start cannibalizing picks and then you're ruining the roster spot flexibility that you need.
For sure. All right, okay, I think we got a little bit of time here to kind of go through. Like, I'm going to bring the ADP down to like the page here to like around 15 plus. And we'll talk about quarterbacks, right? You punt quarterback. You just did your article on this. What are some guys you're looking for in this late round? And like, what kind of archetypes do they fit? If somebody's asking you, like, I'm punting QB, what kind of guy should I be looking for? What's your answer, Kay?
Yeah, I think you have to target two types of quarterbacks. And I said in the article, you kind of like pair them up together, right? I think you take the guaranteed starter types, the DJUs, the EJ Warners, the guy, Graham Mertz. He's not sexy, I'm late, and he's going to play. He does have some bigger games in his back pocket. So, like, it's possible. And then you take the high upside guys, right? You take the Aiden Childs, Lenore Sellers. The guys that are Jalen, Rainer's not going to fall that far, right? But like, what if he did? I want a guy that's going to be either giving me 40 points a game or zero. Like, he's going to be benched by week three. Like, that is kind of the guys that I would pair up with it because you do need that position, such an upside position. You do need to have guys that could get you that way. And I think that's a lot of like runners or high volume guys. So the Washington State quarterbacks are great guys. The hard part there is right now you have to take both. I don't like that idea, but if we did find out that like maybe it's one and you can start to still get some value out of it, then I think that makes sense. Shuck makes a ton of sense because when healthy, he's incredible. You know, Cade Klubnik to me is not a guy that is any good, but he's going to play every single game. And what if I'm wrong and he's actually really good and like Dabo does something weird and all of a sudden opens up the offense? It's not likely, but it could happen. You know, when you get a ton of nobody said Bo Nix was going to do what Bo Nix did, and guess what happened? He did what he did. It's a 10% type situation, 5% type situation. But those are the guys that I need to pair up with the high upside types. Lots of experience paired up with guys that are going to be benched by week three or be superstars. That is what I'm looking for.
See, I disagree with you slightly because, again, I don't want to go with like super safe guys in this range if they're not dual threat guys. Like, to me, it's dual threat or nothing at this point, right? Like, I got to be able to, as I just mentioned, got to sell myself the story of this guy could end up being a top 10 quarterback for CFF this year. So, like, I'm looking at the page right now. EJ Warner is just right there in the middle there, just staring me in the face. And I do think this is actually one of the quarterbacks you took in your late round QB.
I
Strategy
did,
that you
yeah.
did. To me, that's not the guy you go after in this scenario. Because again, he's a pocket passer going to a new system. We don't actually really know how much they're going to throw per game. Best case scenario, I think he ends up like QB 35 to 40, right? I don't see him hitting that upside. Meanwhile, guys like TJ Finley, obviously with the system there at West Kentucky, doesn't really run a ton. He's kind of borderline for me, but like Aiden Childs, John Mateer, Lenore Sellers, Josh Hoover, dual threat guys in schools that want to score quite a bit of points. Those are the guys that like I would be aiming for in this kind of range if I'm punting on QB, just going down a little bit further, right? Because you obviously can't grab all those guys. They all go off in a similar range. Brendan Sorsby at Indiana has been a guy that like if I'm late in quarterbacks or if I feel like I need more quarterbacks, I go after him. Further down, Tucker Gleason, right? AJ Duffy, like those are systems that have produced us great quarterbacks the last couple of years. Like that's what I'm kind of going out for. Versus a guy like Kyle McCord in the 27th round here, ew, that's not what I want. That's not what I would want in a punting QB situation whatsoever.
So, what's funny is I drafted Duffy, I drafted Mikey Keene, I drafted there was somebody else you mentioned. EJ Warner was like, I at Temple, it was shocking how actually productive he was towards the end. He had seven games of over 20 fantasy points. He had a 34, he had a 41. So like I think creating, picking those guys as like a base floor is certainly fine. But again, you have to take some shots at upside. So I definitely agree on that point. I would never take Drew Aller.
No,
Drew
absolutely not.
Aller in this format or this strategy, I wouldn't hate. That's the only time I'd ever take Drew Aller because I know he's going to be on the field. He has rushed and been like a good runner. But otherwise, that's the only time I would take him. Hudson Card is a big guy that Katz loves. Blake Chapin at Mississippi State is another guy that's interesting that people have talked about because of the offensive style. So those are some other names. If you want to think about conceptually, like what you're looking for out of that type of strategy, I think those fit 100%.
No,
But
I
I
think
do think
so.
you're right. The rushing has to, you do have to have some rushing upside 100%.
One other thing I'll point out with quarterbacks here is this has been something that's been successful for me the last 2 years that I think people, again, if you really have a strong feeling about a quarterback battle, take advantage of it, right? Like previous years, Drake May 2022, I had Drake May everywhere. I drafted him a ton around 20 plus because everybody was, again, I don't blame people because that's what the coaching staff was saying. But like everything looked to me, I was just like this dude like started a game for UNC. The practice reports have been good. Brandon Sanders was there at the spring game saying that Drake May was like everybody around him was treating him as if like they were treating him as if he was the starter. And I'm like, you know what? Like, he's gonna be the guy. I'm gonna draft him. And guess what? He ended up being a top 10 QB. Jalen Milroe last year. This is a dude that was going off super late because everybody was talking about Tyler Buchner. People were talking about Ty Simpson. They're like, oh, no way. Jalen Milroe is actually gonna be the starting quarterback for Alabama. And I'm just sitting there like, well, he's a dual threat guy on an offense that if, you know, unless he completely tanks it for some reason, like they're gonna score 40 points a game. Like, I'm gonna take the shot on that because I'm confident that he's gonna end up winning this job. I did not like Tyler Buchner whatsoever last year. I was never on that train. Ty Simpson scared me like a little bit at first, but once it was kind of clear that he wasn't gonna be that, I went all in on Jalen Milroe. So again, guys that might fit that mold here this year. AJ Duffy, because again, people are like, oh, he's not the official starter for San Diego State. Jon Batiere is probably the biggest one that I've been investing a ton of in for Washington State this year. If you have a strong feeling about TJ Finley or Caden Veldkamp at Western Kentucky, Ethan Vasco at Coastal Carolina, I think could be another one. And then JC French at Georgia Southern. Those are some guys that, like, if you feel very strongly about any of those quarterback competitions, those guys all going late, take advantage of it. In a late round QB strategy like this.
Yeah, they certainly have the upside you're looking for sure.
Cool. All right, running backs, okay? I'll let you start off with this. If you're punting running back like 15 rounds plus, which I will put somebody in a mental asylum if they tried this strategy, but say they did. Say you felt crazy one day, okay, and you didn't have a running back until round 15. What are you looking for?
I'm not even sure I would know what to look for. Man, I'm just trying to look at like some of these running backs that are available. I would say I would just be trying to nail like the running back rooms that I think people are wrong on. So like just a couple to think about would be like TCU. Like the problem is no one is smart enough to get everything right. So if you
No.
wait till round 15 and said, hey, I have five running back rooms I know I'm right on and they're wrong on, you're still not going to get more than three right. Like nobody's smarter than that. But let's just play along with it real quick. TCU with that running back room, it feels like Trey Sanders is more drafted higher than Cook. If like maybe Missouri, right, with like Nate Noel, right? Bama with their running back room. Like those are the situations I would take, like a Catron Allen, a Jaquindon Jackson. Those guys feel like running back by committee that all it takes is one thing to happen and all of a sudden they're getting. I think like Jaquindon could easily get running back one status, like in terms of a heavy workload. Allen needs an injury. Allen needs something to spark that, but those are the types of things I'd be thinking about. That's the position I would not play around with, which is funny because you only technically have to roster two of them in most leagues. So, but I still wouldn't do it. That one feels like one of those ones where it's a little bit harder to predict guys that come out of nowhere compared to receiver.
See, again, I pretty much agree with you, especially on the part when it comes to guys that like their opportunity will explode if the opportunity arises, like you said, whether it's an injury or, you know, like if they just prove that they're the better back, like that's a staff that's willing to go and ride them. Think again, you gave Krayshawn Allen, I think, is a great example. Braylon McReynolds and Kentrell Bullock, I think, like, those are guys going round 15 plus that, like, if you're convinced that, like, they'll explode if the other one goes down, probably go with that guy. Jonbry Dubar is a guy I love at Boise State. If GNT goes down, I don't think there's a huge drop off between GNT and him. Another thing that, like, has worked for me the last couple of years is drafting veterans on teams, right? Even if their previous years have not been home runs for CFF, think guys like Taj Brooks, Kyrie Robinson, Cody Schrader, Jermaine Brown, guys that are like 6-year players that are like, you know, they've been around for a long time. They're basically adults playing a college kid's game, right? Their last year, teams might be more likely to kind of ride them into the dust for the most part. Some guys that I think that kind of fit that bill this year, Devin Maccabee going round 15 plus, John Gentry at Sam Houston, Ulysses Bentley before, you know, all those transfers came in. Like, that was my mindset behind drafting Ulysses Bentley. I'm like, well, they don't got anybody else. He's been around for a while. Maybe this is his year. And then Jacquez Moore at Duke. That's a guy, again, new coaching staff, obviously, so there's some changes there, obviously. But guys have just been with their teams for forever. Sometimes coaching staffs like to reward that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Maccabee's a good call out. I like that one. If you like James Madison running backs, like if you like Ayo Adai, then Pettaway, like I think that's a great one. If you have an idea of like which one's going to win it, like that's a good offense to have. So like I feel like that one's another positional battle that is interesting.
No, great call. All right, let's finish up with wide receivers here, Kay. Kind of my thoughts on if you're punting wide receiver for whatever reason, and like what are you looking for round 15 plus? One, go for some hidden target hogs. Some examples here: Kenneth Womack, 101 targets last year. I consider any wide receiver with over 100 targets a good CFF pick if you can find a path to that. Womack's already done it once. Obviously, his A dot and his yards per catch are atrocious, but you know, maybe that improves this year. But Krayshawn McKay, the wide receiver out of Kent State, was on pace for 97 targets last year. Over his last five games, he had a wide receiver pace or target pace of 129 over 12 games if he just took his last five games. So those are guys both going round 15 plus. Find some value there. I would also say look for receivers in rooms where there seems like there's going to be very little rotation with the starters and or little depth behind them. An example is Washington last year, right? They were not going into any game that they could help it without constantly keeping Adunze Polk and McMillan out there, right? There was nobody. I mean, Jerby Bernard got rotated in as well, but that's, again, because McMillan went down.
Injuries, yeah.
Some examples I think this year would be Mississippi State. Again, it really seems like they're going to rely quite heavily on Kevin Coleman and Kelly Akari over there. And I don't really think there's much depth behind those guys, so they're going to be on the field all the time. Syracuse, I've been talking about them recently. It really seems like they have their kind of set four guys that are going to be out there all the time. They're not rotating a bunch. I would go after offenses like that. And then, you know, what can I say? I'm a systems guy. Shoot for system. Josh Meredith at Wazoo playing in the slot for Ben Arbuckle. Love to see it. Jordan Hudson, SMU. We've loved SMU wide receivers in the past. This is Hudson's second year. Maybe he breaks out this year being the outside guy. Ja'Cory Bell, Chris Bell, outside wide receivers in Jeff Brohm's system. Why not take the shot there? Lewis Brown, Nate Bennett, San Diego State. If you believe in their offense this year, go after it. So, okay, your thoughts on that, and then I'll let you talk about the targeting the third wide receivers.
I think you pretty much nailed it. I think all those guys make a ton of sense. I took three receivers 23rd round or later in one of my more recent drafts. Tell me that these three couldn't easily end up top 50 or top 60. Easton Messer,
yep.
Jimmy Horn, Xavier Thomas. Like,
yeah,
I those guys easily could be very pedestrian, but those could easily be top 60 type, top 50. You know, like a Messer could easily be top 20. If Xavier Thomas is actually like the guy, or maybe like a receiver too, that's a great option in the LSU. Some of these other interesting names: Kobe Prentice in the last champion series went 26th round, which is insane. I'll take that every day of the week. I mean, I'll take that as a shot, right? So I do think there's some options out there, like USC receivers. Jacoby Lane has gotten some hype. Deuce Robinson, those guys are mid-ish 20s. Like,
if even that.
Yeah, those options, those are like free guys that you should throw randomly at darts at, because like they do have the potential upside to have big seasons. So I do really like those types of guys. And I think they fit the mold of what we're looking at here for sure.
Sounds good. And then again, you kind of pushed the theory last year of targeting third receivers in high passing teams.
Well, I haven't dug into it too much, and this is something that Eric Froton from MSC Sports and then our buddy Franchise had talked about, and I kind of just did it on campus again. But last year I wrote about like Jalen Polk is like an option, right? And Froton said the year before his big one was Emeka Egbuka, right? And he had a huge year. Polk, huge year. The concept is just generally speaking, passing offenses where the third option is going to be used. And all it takes is one injury, maybe like Polk just playing better than McMillan, and all of a sudden now he's the second guy. And that value of like, hey, I got him in the 23rd round, and now he's a top 6 round receiver type is valuable. I'm gonna dig in. Well, that's gonna be one of my more future speaking articles. Is gonna be something. It's gonna be this year's variation of it. So I don't have anybody off the top of my head specifically. But I do think like the LSU, the USC, the Colorado types, where we are fairly sure they'll use three. We just don't necessarily know which three or like who that third one is, could fit that type of mix of like, hey, all it takes is one injury, one great week, you know, like one great fall practice group, like, and then all of a sudden they're completely in the mix in a good offense. So it's an interesting one. Did you have any ideas of guys that you liked off the cuff that could fit that mold?
Yeah, I mean, you'll like this very first one, Brew McCoy, Tennessee.
Just inject it directly into my veins.
I know, but like seriously, Squirrel White's going super high, and I don't blame him. He had almost 100 targets last year. Chris Brazell is actually the second Tennessee wide receiver coming off the board. Brew McCoy is the number three guy there. This targeting the third wide receiver, in addition to like you're talking about, like you know, if a guy ahead of them goes down, they're in for a big target jump. It's also playing on the idea that the gap between the second and third guy isn't as big as it appears in drafts, right? And so, like, you take advantage of that. Again, some other guys here, like NC State, right? Love Kevin Concepcion. I like Noah Rogers. Wesley Grimes, right there. Dakari Collins. You might as well take shots on them because, again, maybe the gap between them and Noah Rogers isn't as big as we think. Or if one of the guys goes down, they're in for a big workload. Wazoo, I keep talking about them, but Chris Hudson, Josh Meredith, Carlos Hernandez, these guys are all going way past Kyle Williams, and Kyle Williams might be the lowest ceiling of the three or of the four, honestly. And so, like, just taking shots on those guys whenever you can, I don't blame you. I think it's good.
Yeah, and you listed Washington State. That's another one too, right? Like that's an offense you want a piece of, and there's some murkiness that which helps, but also like we know the pieces in play. So
For sure. All righty. I think that pretty much brings us to the end of our show. Kay, I appreciate you coming on here. I know we've had some trials and tribulations here today. I know you got to head out of here soon, but you got any quick things you want to say to the audience before you head out?
No, I'm going back to work. It's RIP, RIP, the work free Chris K. But yeah, I've enjoyed hopping on with you more recently and going to be doing some Burning the Red Shirt podcasts. I think we're going to do one tomorrow, aka Monday, which should be today. So for the listeners. So yeah, just look out for some podcasts from Burning the Red Shirt and some random appearances, random articles. And yeah, let's enjoy the off season as much as we can.
For sure, and we're going to have some fun here over the next couple of weeks. Again, haven't figured out next week's topic, but in 2 weeks, I will have on Nicholas Ian Allen. We'll be promoting those team profiles, and we're going to do a very unique show, in my opinion, where we're going to talk about pretty much everything but quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. We're going to talk about some position groups that you don't normally think about in CFF, but they do impact your favorite players. Like, think about, like, you know, O-lines being able to create space for their running backs, stuff like that. We'll dive into some of that with Nicholas Ian Allen here in a couple of weeks, and haven't announced the exactly who will be a part of it, but we will be bringing back the Price is Right CFF edition. Kay, you were a part of that a couple years ago with Nate. Last year we had John Lobb and Eric Froton. We had an absolute blast. We will have another one of those here probably towards the end of the month, so be on the lookout for that. With all that being said, appreciate all of you guys listening. We are here at the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, comment, and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, you're on the podcast side of things, follow the show, leave a 5-star review if you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to college fantasy. We'll see you guys back here next week. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.